No, as in about. No, I know before. A few patrons there decided to include some Americans. And they're popping up, assisting out the door. On the way to the car, he falls down. Once. Twice. Three times. And they get to his house. They help him out of the car, he falls down four more times. They finally carry him to his front door and ring the doorbell. His wife opens the door. "Here's your husband," the good Samaritans explain proudly. "Thank you," said his wife. "What did you do with his good chick?" Helping people isn't always as clear cut as the parable Jesus told is. We don't always have the whole story for the person or for the problem that we encounter. To be fair, Jesus told the whole story just to illustrate what it meant to be a neighbor. He provides in this story a definitive example of what the expectation is of a Christian disciple. A benchmark, if you like, for the compassion and commitment that we are meant to embody when we face these situations. In essence, the parable teaches that genuine love for others crosses the boundaries of religion, of ethnicity, social status, and so forth. The neighbor in Jesus' story is not determined by where he was, whether he was similar, or whether he shared community, but by mercy in action. The Samaritan, moved by compassion, provides care and resources for the wounded stranger without expectation of reward. Helping people can be messy, though. It can be ongoing, and it can be wary on the helper. What if week after week, the Samaritan encountered the same problem? A different man, each time on the road, same condition. And he kept risking himself and lending his time, money, and resources each and every time an opportunity to do so presents itself. What is, as is often the case, all one can do will simply never be enough. We all see the many pleas for help in giving to charities. So by the end of one night's viewing on TV, if I pay for all of them, the next night on TV would be an ad to help me. We can get compassion fatigue. So in this case, maybe we're like the lawyer who asked Jesus a question. So who is my neighbor anyway? The discussion Jesus was having with the lawyer could have just been public debate, which was pretty common at that time. He might have been testing Jesus, but that's not completely clear. But the term translated here as neighbor means one who is near. And it doesn't refer to everyone. And Leviticus 19:18 does not advocate love of everyone, who is usually interpreted by the Jews as helping fellow Jews. So there was a legitimate reason for the lawyer to be seeking clarification. But Jesus' masterstroke here was to make the hero a Samaritan, because nothing would have grated more to a pure Jewish lawyer. The enmity with the Samaritan went back 900 years. And this is echoed as well in Luke 17, where only a Samaritan leper came back to thank Jesus. Jesus is often using these things just to really drive us home. Now I want to digress a little bit and talk about John Ronald Rule Tolkien, author of the fantasy series The Lord of the Rings, and a few others as well. Tolkien was a devout Catholic. He married a Protestant girl called Edith, and together they endured the prejudice and the social discrimination that entailed at the time. This is back 1900s, 1910 to 20. Modern driving was heavily influenced by both his faith and his experiences in the First World War. According to his children, John and Priscilla Tolkien, in later years, he would occasionally talk of being in front of the horrors of the first German gas attack, of the utter exhaustion, ominous quiet after a bombardment, the whining scream of the shells and the endless marching, always on foot, through a devastated landscape, sometimes carrying his men's equipment as well as his own, just to encourage them to keep going. Scholars dissecting the book series draw many parallels from the Bible, and Tolkien admitted as much himself. What that's like, then. Quote from The Lord of the Rings, and one of my favourites, must have been heavily influenced by our reading today. "I wish it need not have happened in my time," said Frodo. "So do I," said Gandalf, "and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." Quite highlights the themes of faith, responsibility, and the importance of action in the face of adversity. In Colossians, Paul opens the reader, the letter to the believers in Colossae, with a warm greeting from Paul and Timothy, followed by thanksgiving for the faith and love of the Colossian church, and a heartfelt prayer for the growth in knowledge, character, and spiritual strength. Paul expresses a deep gratitude to God whenever he prays for the Colossian believers. He gives thanks for their faith in Jesus Christ. The Colossians' genuine trust in Jesus is the foundation of their lives. Their love for the saints, their love toward fellow believers, is evidence of their transformed hearts. Hope played over again. Paul points to the hope the Colossians have in Christ, a hope that is stored up for them beyond this life. Paul highlights that this hope came to them through the gospel, which is bearing fruit and growing throughout the world, just as it has among men since the day they first understood God's grace. And I'm going to personalize the next part of it. I'm going to replace the church in Colossae with the church in Endeavour Hills. He prays that the Endeavour Hills United Church may be filled with the knowledge of God's will. Paul desires that we have spiritual freedom and understanding so that we can live lives pleasing to God. Two, to bear fruit in every good work. Our knowledge should translate into good deeds and consistent growth in our relationship with God. Three, be strengthened with all power. Paul asks that God would empower us with his strength, enabling us to be patient and endure hardships with joy. Fourth, to give thanks to the Father. Gratitude should mark our lives, for God has qualified us share in the inheritance of the saints. I think when we get compassion fatigue, it pays to look to Christ, to renew us in prayer and in meditation on the Bible. We are incredibly privileged in Australia today. More and more around us are being tough. And we can all choose where to draw the line in our giving. Remember, the parable of the Good Samaritan has a benchmark, and that we are called to get our hands dirty as we respond to